And that's the kicky music that means it is time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. As we tape this, we're less than 24 hours removed from the Tony Awards, which did their usual job of making all the other awards shows look terrible. So we'll talk a little about that. We'll then turn our attention to music and specifically to a kind of song we're calling He Said, She Said. And as always, we'll close with what's making us happy this week. Before we get started, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I cover movies and pop culture and occasionally theater for NPR.org, and I have a full page of bulleted notes about the Tonys.
That's wonderful. And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
Well, we watched the Tony Awards.
And Trey is going to read his bullet point notes.
Yep.
So, I'm going to sit back.
Stretch. Have a coffee.
Out.
Well, I just want to start with the thing that I wrote about on the blog first thing this morning, which is that the greatest award show opening number ever? I think is the question.
I think categorically we can say yes. It is all that my Twitter feed could talk about for about 12 hours.
The season's new recruits include the cast of Kinky Boots. You know they're beautiful and buff as Navy SEALs. And you could bounce a quarter off the ass of Billy Porter. Lord, he does 8 shows a week in 8-inch heels. Hats off to Berry Gordy. He runs Motown like a boss. He dominates Top 40 and he banged Diana Ross. He wrote his own libretto, which is really kind of ballin'. He took every Motown classic and he said, I'll put them all in. Make it bigger. That's right, it's bigger.
It's bigger. He literally jumps through a hoop.
He jumped through a hoop. Did yeah. actually jump through a hoop.
I went into this with a certain amount of Doogie fatigue, frankly.
No.
Yeah. I was thinking, okay, we've seen him do this. We've seen him do it 3 times.
Yep.
Well, you've seen him do it.
Yeah, that's true, right. That's very true. He nailed it. And in fact, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I really think he outshone the musical performances from the actual
Is not uncommon, though. The live musical performances on these Tony broadcasts are often not anywhere near as good as the same performance would be in the context of that show.
Sure.
They cut them, they clip them, they restage them. You know, the poor performers are hustled on and off.
It's a little bit like seeing a live band perform on David Letterman.
Right.
You know, where you come in,
you're on an unfamiliar
stage. Tiny Desk, they can build up.
Yeah.
You just get a cold open, you play one song, you get off. I think that they're naturally going to be a little bit more stilted. But Neil Patrick Harris, I can feel you, Glenn, on the everywhereness. There's
right.
a better word than everywhereness of Neil Patrick Harris right now. But it took me about 20 seconds into that opening number before I was completely sold. I was also, parts of it I found incredibly moving.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was not only funny and charming and
huge and
just
elaborate
incredibly big.
And amazing. And
Trey, talk to me about some of the technical aspects of this, like his breath control, being able to go into the magical box and then run halfway up the theater and then keep singing, and also his diction. You end this giant number with a bit of patter, right?
At the end of the day, we are gathered together to honor the best and the brightest. And tomorrow, the fashion police will report on your dress and who wore it the tightest. If you win, have the time of your life. Tell your manager, dad, and your mom thanks. Hi to your kids and your husband or wife, maybe just for the hell of it, Tom Hanks. Nothing is bigger and better than seeing a veteran get an ovation or seeing a brilliant beginner freak out on a win on their first nomination. There's a kid in the middle of nowhere who's sitting there living for Tony performances, singing and flipping along with the Pippins and Wickets and Kinkies, Matildas, and Mormonses.
Pretty phenomenal patter, I gotta say. He's doing a patter song that's right out of Gilbert and Sullivan, which Lin-Manuel Miranda, the very talented lyricist of
In the Heights,
thank you.
And we should point out that a patter song in theater terms is the little, it's like a talkie song.
I am the very model of a Major Major General.
You just blew it. Yeah. You said Major Major General?
No, I didn't. Did I?
Did I
blow the patter song? Okay, fine.
The point being, the patter songs are those little, most well-known from Gilbert and Sullivan,
sure.
But Neil Patrick Harris and Lin-Manuel Miranda have made a tradition of doing these often at the end of the night.
Right.
But there was a large chunk of this incorporated at the beginning.
So 2 points. One, I think they're both aware that we have some Doogie fatigue, so he referenced the fact that this is the fourth time he's hosted this. It was both a kind of, I can't help it, they keep asking me back, and it was also a dig at the Oscars. I don't know if you noticed, sure, but they said, they'll have me back because we've got this down.
Yeah.
Right.
Stephen mentioned this a little bit, but the other thing about that opening, and this is where I think they managed to raise the stakes a little bit so that you didn't just feel like you were watching them do another big We Love the Theater number, is that late in this number, when they are doing this patter song, they introduced a theme that recurred a couple of times over the course of the evening in acceptance speeches, mm-hmm, which is this recognition that theater people feel particularly responsible for reaching out to kids who are looking for their tribe, kids who feel like they are desperate to find their tribe and might never find it. And they, more than movie people, more than musicians, more than TV actors certainly, feel a genuine obligation to try to find and save and reach out to those kids.
Who the lead actor from Kinky Boots?
Billy Porter.
Billy Porter.
I was going to say, Neil Patrick Harris said
the same thing.
Introduces this idea in the opening number, and then Billy Porter wins Best Actor in a Musical and comes back and just gives this heartfelt speech about how he watched the Tonys and saw
Jennifer Holliday
in the cast of Dreamgirls and sort of recognized his people and wanted to do that right away. And there he was accepting a Tony, and that's kind of awesome. It's worth pointing out that one of the throwaway jokes in the opening number involved Neil Patrick Harris waving his arm at these three guys in tutus and pointing out that they're the grown-up Billy Elliots, mm-hmm, right? Those are the three young actors who shared a Tony nominee. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. It's worth checking out, but I'm pretty sure.
I can definitively say that probably.
Probably. That's a whole show about this very idea, about, you know, a kid finding his own tribe from way out in the suburbs.
There were a lot of kids.
Oh, man.
There were a lot of kids.
A few too many kids.
There were the
orphans. You got
orphans.
Your Annies. You got your Matildas. Newsies came back again.
A Christmas story. Actually, the kids in A Christmas Story were my favorite. I felt like the kids in A Christmas Story, including that one tap dancing kid.
Unsettling tap dancing kid.
Amazing.
Something about him was
amazing.
Not of this earth.
That was wonderful. That was so cool.
I got to say that part of the show exists to be an advertisement, and that's another theme they hit.
More than part of the show.
Okay. So they want you to come to New York to see live theater, and I wasn't convinced to this year. I mean, I didn't see anything. I didn't think the Matilda number kind of reached out of the screen and did anything dazzling. I couldn't understand
the words that they were saying.
Because
that, quite frankly, is why Kinky Boots won the Tony.
Right.
The producers and the Tony voters were, you know, there was lots of back and forth. And there was lots of betting that Matilda was going to win it. But later in the game, the odds sort of tilted toward Kinky Boots because, remember, something like 2/3 of the Tony voters are people who are involved with sending Broadway shows on the road where they will make more money than they ever did on Broadway.
Yeah.
And those people expect Kinky Boots to be a little easier sell to people who would like to hear the lyrics and not be overwhelmed by the very noisy Matilda.
Yeah,
And the accents. Also.
And I will say another one of my highlights was Cyndi Lauper winning the Tony for her writing of the Kinky Boots music.
I just love her. I just love her.
I was saying to somebody last night, she is to me a genuinely fascinating person of whom there are not that many. It's something you say about lots of people. Oh, she's so fascinating. She is truly a fascinating person to me, and came on in the 80s essentially at the same time as Madonna, and there was this thing about the two of them, and because they both had very distinct styles and personas, and who was going to be bigger, and of course Madonna became a much bigger moneymaker and all that business, but Cyndi Lauper has matured into this extremely interesting artist and just person. And she, if you watch, we talked one time about her reality show where she goes hat shopping for the Derby. She's just a really cool, interesting lady. And here she is doing a completely different new thing somewhat late in the game.
But she has always, consistently, the through line across her career has been a celebration of oddballs. And I remember, you know, when I was a kid and she was first becoming a star, finding that incredibly appealing and knowing that there were kids who were you know, who were obsessed with her because her whole thing was be different, up to and including like her embrace of pro wrestling.
Somebody pointed out on Twitter last night,
is she the first
Tony winner to have managed a professional wrestler?
To report to Captain Lou Albano.
Right. Absolutely. It's so cool. She's such a cool lady. I just think the world of her.
I am personally very pleased about Kinky Boots' win for score, not to mention Best Musical, because my friend Rich Morell helped write some of the songs on that show. So there you go.
I was really excited because I'm a member of the Gersh Agency. I did a Gersh Agency count, 3 different speeches. Yep. The Gersh. I feel like the orchestra should automatically start playing you off when you mention the Gersh Agency.
And I have to get my other shout out would be, I am really surprised that this revival of Pippin has done so well, because Pippin is not only a very weird show in some ways, but Pippin is a very dark show, and also a show that is not only from the 70s, but really of the 70s. And if you, no matter how much you update it, to me, in the same way as, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar and some of that stuff can come off really dated.
Well, but we can talk about dated with so many of these productions. I mean, I think I said in a previous discussion of the Tonys on this show that the next hot musical is going to be a 3 Men and a Baby? Yeah. So, and I thought that throughout the whole thing, sort of like Father of the Bride, the musical.
Right. Hal Prince comes out and boasts about Phantom of the Opera having the largest orchestra on Broadway.
28 instruments, he said.
Okay.
He didn't mention players.
Cut to the actual song. I've never seen Phantom of the Opera. I had no idea it sounded like that. It would have been great if they had cut to the orchestra and we see the guy from Flock of Seagulls standing behind a keyboard, hitting middle C over and over again. That's kind of what I expected.
It sounded like a cassette.
It's ridiculous.
My comment was it sounded like Stars on 45. Yeah. Do you remember the Stars on 45?
Yeah.
Those of you who are of that vintage, it was a kind of a synthesizer thing that did Beatles covers.
I would not be at all surprised to discover that they were using a string synthesizer, because they often do that to double and triple strings.
Yeah. Okay, but I don't understand. Because, I mean, it's not like Godspell or Jesus Christ Superstar, which is supposed to sound very, you know, fuzzy in 70s. It's, you know,
it should sound big
century.
And operatic, but that's how that show has always sounded.
It sounded horrendous.
My buddy Adam on Twitter, who is a theater guy, actually said that they have increased the use of synthesizers over the years. Because my question was, has it always sounded like that? Like, has it always sounded this? And he said, it did, but they have increased its synthesizeriness over time. And we had this conversation, I believe, about the Godspell last year, the Jesus Christ Superstar, maybe, and the Godspell. I think they did both last year, didn't
they? I believe you're right.
And we had a conversation about how dated they felt. Phantom of the Opera was the one that felt that dated to me, whereas Pippin felt surprisingly less dated than Phantom. And I think of Pippin as the most easily dated-seeming thing.
Everything has its season, everything has its time. Show me a reason and I'll soon show you a rhyme. Cats fit on the windowsill, children fit in the snow. So why do I feel I don't fit in anywhere I go?
I gotta say, I am immensely conflicted about both the revival of Pippin and its astonishing success. It has gotten rave reviews, and it's really pulling in the crowds, and now it's, you know, it's winning awards. I'm conflicted because, A, I think it's one of the darker and more complicated Stephen Schwartz shows, so I'm glad that they chose that one to bring back and give it a good, loving, lavish, smart revival, right? I'm conflicted because I am just not a fan of Stephen Schwartz. I don't think any of his stuff is terribly complicated.
Other than Pippin, what has he done that you're talking about?
Wicked? No. I am not a fan of Godspell, I gotta say. I am not a fan of, what is it, Children of Eden? Not a fan.
I like Children of Eden, actually.
Ugh,
wow.
Trey, I want all of you to know, and the rest of you have no way of knowing this, only Trey and I know. Trey just made this noise about a show about the Bible. It's literally Bible stories, and Trey went like this. So there you go. Anyway.
Heathen. Just not a giant fan of Stephen Schwartz. But this revival, again, many intelligent, creative people getting lots of plaudits for it. So I'm just going to take what I can get with that.
Pippin is an interesting show. I mean, I got to know Pippin as a high school student, basically, doing it at a summer camp, essentially music camp, which is
where everyone learns Corner of the Sky.
Everyone learns Corner of the Sky and Pippin in general and all that stuff. But as I got older, I really did come to appreciate how layered the message of that show is and the thinking about that show and how much it kind of dismantles the idea of the sort of wandering, you know, the young man out on his own. It was a very romantic idea, not just in theater, but in American, particularly, I think, in American stuff. And it sort of takes that apart. And as, you know, one of the questions I asked today to my social media pals is, who's a worse prospect, right? Pippin or Bobby from Company?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, they're both terrible.
They're both terrible romantic prospects.
And you know, the knocking down of that character and everything he represents, which in fact results in Corner of the Sky, the show's most famous song, ultimately turning out to be kind of the one where you look back and you go, oh, yeah, that guy was full of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, because if you don't know Pippin somehow, what it kind of tells you is that not every dream is going to come true.
Well, and
not going to be a happy ending for everybody, right?
And so many shows, so many musicals have that, let me describe my dream.
Mm-hmm.
And generally that dream will either come true or
you learn to pursue
a different dream. In this one, the ultimate message of Pippin is you were always wrong to be focusing all of your attention on grandiose dreams about how big and important your life was going to be. And in fact, there is also a song in Pippin, which is kind of at that point where the show is starting to pivot on him and on that character, where he sings about, I'm not the kind of guy who's designed to do regular day-to-day work.
I am
special. But the noise you're making is the same noise the show is ultimately making, which is why I like it.
Well, I didn't see anything in the performance last night that made me want to remotely interested.
Me neither. None of that. You have to see the whole thing, unfortunately. Yeah. When you see small pieces of that show, it doesn't translate at all. Mm-hmm. But I had the reaction to Matilda, to some of the other stuff. I took a shower during the Kinky Boots one, but but the Matilda one and some of the other ones where I kind of thought, yeah, none of this
bring
is
it,
really
Bring It On
anything.
Kind of stood out for me. Bring It On stood
it
out for me.
It was fun.
But it's closed.
Big
so,
and athletic, yeah.
It was fun, but it didn't stand out musically. It stood out as a fun number, but the music didn't.
Can we talk about Jane Lynch performing the role of Miss Hannigan in Annie? She just recently took over that role.
Little girls, everywhere I turn, I can see them. Little girls, night and day, I eat, sleep, and breathe them. I'm an ordinary woman with feelings. I like a man to nibble on my ear, but I'll admit, no man has bit. So how come I'm a mother of the year?
You know, we know she can sing Mighty Wind, you know, other things. We know she's got a voice. She attacked that role with ferocity. She didn't bring a lot of funny, I didn't think, but she was really attacking that role. It felt a little off to me.
It's kind of how that character is.
Yeah.
She's a drunk and she hates the
and
kids.
She genuinely hates the kids.
I mean, she's that.
It is ultimately a comedy number, but it is often played straight. Like, I mean, I remember Carol Burnett kind of chewing that song up and being a little scary.
I don't know.
I'm not saying anything.
All right. What about the Andrew Reynolds, Laura Benanti?
How adorable was that?
I like to star in a TV show. Me walk popular on a TV show. Chauffeur in car with a TV show. That's if you are on a TV show. I mean, I love the theater, but no matinee on a TV show. No to a day on a TV show. No at least pay on a TV show. If you can stay on a TV show. Well, now you're just being a douche. Well,
go work your agent submissions at a call audition. Don't
it won't get too far. But you gotta have a series if you wanna be a star.
Okay.
Land a Broadway show, sure, but if you want exposure, a sitcom helps to burnish your name. You gotta have a series if you want a shot at fame. I'll drink to that.
That was exactly what that show needed right in the middle, because I was starting to lose interest.
Andrew Reynolds, who was on The New Normal, Megan Hilty, who
from
was
Smash.
The only good thing about Smash, and Laura Benanti, who just was canceled from Go On, and before that was canceled from The Playboy Club.
Those are two shows. And they made all kinds of mileage out of it.
Got together, and they did a number where they talked about, essentially, to hell with television.
To hell with television.
We're coming back
with Neil Patrick Harris.
But with Neil Patrick Harris, who's basically saying, hey, my show's still running, so suck it.
Yeah. That was really good. Was as you pointed out, it was actually the closest it came to edgy.
But it didn't, need to be edgy.
Right, exactly. Right.
Going back to the discussion of other awards shows and why we did the Oscars, it seems like a week ago and it was several months, but all that stuff, I mean, the Seth MacFarlane and Ricky Gervais, going on these awards shows to, take the piss out of out of these stuffed shirts. And where are there more stuffed shirts than in the Tony Awards?
Yeah.
And there was no reason to do it. There was no need to do it. One thing that I thought through it was, every once in a while you get, this, I have trod the boards of the, these very, very pompous people. But it didn't need to take the starch out of these stuffed shirts.
Right.
It was very loving. It was never mean, but it was fun and funny. Now my tastes run on regular awards shows, one musical number is about my over under, and this of course had 15.
Nine, yeah.
Right. But it was a very fun and very, not only enthusiastic, but very affectionate show. And I think that's part of what was appealing about it.
I didn't get several of the jokes because they were in jokes, and I didn't mind it. It was astonishing to me that I didn't mind it, that I didn't find it insular and annoying. I got that this is a community of people who speak the same language, and it was kind of like being invited in to a party and standing at the edge.
Right.
My usual place.
Yes, your place on the periphery. Right.
Yeah, and we should mention before we close that they had a closing number in which Neil Patrick Harris and Audra McDonald did an Empire State of Mind.
So a rewrite, again, with lyrics by Lin-Manuel, written during the show.
Yeah. Yep. About all the happenings during the show.
The winners and the happenings.
So
and
fun.
At the end of which, Audra McDonald quite literally dropped the mic.
She sure did.
And as far as highlights from the actual awards themselves, a ton of women won
women
major directing awards.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great night for women. I just want to point out
great night for Chicago and Boston.
Yeah. Very good night for Chicago and Boston for the regional theater. The second year in a row that shows from the regionals have kind of dominated the proceedings.
Yeah, that's what you said last year.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
So Tony's. Pro.
We are pro.
Once again.
This is always the one where I always think, you do stink, Oscars. This is not just something we say.
No.
It's not inherent.
We're not just tired of awards shows, by the
right.
way.
It's not us, Oscars. It's you.
They do need to figure out how to involve the straight plays.
They do.
Right. It's just
it still doesn't work at all.
Film them and show them to us because that's not. Don't show us a montage if you're celebrating live theater. Don't show us a filmed montage.
How do you integrate a dramatic scene into
they've tried it it never
it is perilously it. Difficult and I think it's because scenes don't work out of context
sure
the way musical numbers do. All I can say is I felt for poor Jesse Eisenberg having to cram all of that narrative in there in that montage, but B, fist bump to Mike Tyson for being perfectly happy to be the joke that keeps on giving.
Yeah,
I don't know about that.
I don't know how happy he was. He was willing to be there.
Willing.
And also, Mike Tyson is not Jack Palance. He's not like this kind of funny figure. He's kind of beneath contempt, this guy. So, I'm not crazy about
that.
Has
certainly at times had serious problems that give people serious misgivings about him. That I will say that much. At any rate, come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on the blog at npr.org/PCHH and tell us what you thought of the Tonys, whether you are interested in theater, and what you think of wonderful opening numbers. I will hear no dissent. No. Okay, so we're going to stay a little bit musically inclined this week. We wanted to talk about a genre of song that we have sort of dug up ourselves. The he said, she said. Glenn, was this your topic?
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking about this kind of a song recently. So the He Said, She Said song is songs of a... They're basically duets, or they incorporated a duet at some point. It's a pop song we're thinking about here, where it's sort of the soundtrack of a breakup. Because relationships are basically Rashomon with passive aggression. So people have these two different opposing, often, opinions of what's going on in the relationship. And then when it breaks up, you get two different versions of it. And that's what the He Said, She Said songs we're going to be talking about today sort of take up.
Not every single one of mine is a breakup song.
I'll not necessarily. But I mean, you know.
But that's the root.
But differing perspectives.
Differing perspectives on the same thing. So, for example, if it is a breakup song, you know, I'm still waiting for the He Said, She Said song. It's like, and your friends are horrible. Like, that kind of thing. All this saved up stuff comes out at the end.
Give us an example.
But the classic example, the seminal example of this, is a little song by the Human League called Don't You Want Me.
There were never any songs before.
Never before.
You were working as a waitress in a cocktail bar when I met you. I picked you out, I shook you up and turned you around, turned you into someone new.
So we have here a guy saying, I've discovered you, I've put you out on the road, and then becoming, and what I want to explore here is the kind of different power dynamics in the in these songs here, because in this one, the guy is clearly kind of a douche, because all he's saying is, I picked you up, I turned you around, and I could put you back where I found you. And how does she respond to that? She comes back to him with a remarkable amount of kindness and restraint. She says,
God, what an ass.
Right? My point.
He's a terrible person.
He's a terrible,
worse
terrible
than Pippin.
Person.
He's clearly a bad person. But I'm sorry, this is from when? What's the vintage?
1981.
Yeah.
So, and the feminist reply would be, what?
Yeah.
I know.
Now, I want to go to Stephen next, because I made a guess to our producer, Jess Gittner, about one that Stephen was going to give her.
About how crushingly predictable I am?
Which is, which is, to me, a close relative of that song.
Okay.
So do you know what I'm talking about?
Okay, my
Stephen
guess
Thompson?
Is that you're thinking of Your Ex-Lover Is Dead
I
by
am.
Stars. Yeah.
I am.
The first thing I thought of when I saw this topic was, well, I'm going to be talking about a lot of Stars songs.
Yeah.
Stars is a Canadian pop band that has baked into the band a primary male singer and a primary female singer, Torquil Campbell and Amy Milan. And they often sing back and forth over each other, and they often weave conversations into their songs. And what a recurring theme in Stars songs, and it's clearly deliberate, is that he is just a monster. and she sort of patiently endures him.
Yeah.
And so there were a couple of songs that I couldn't even decide between the two I really singled out. One is called Personal, which is this unbelievably sad song in which they are just reciting personal ads to each other.
Wanted single F, under 33, must enjoy the sun, must enjoy the sea, sought by single M, Mrs. Destiny, send photo to address, is it you and me?
Reply to single M, my name is Caroline, cell phone number here, call if you have the time, 28 and bored, grieving over loss, sorry to be heavy, but heavy is the cost, heavy is the cost.
Such a great song. But Your Ex-Lover Is Dead is actually a post-breakup song where they encounter each other later, and he is pretending he doesn't know her name, and she's incredibly wise. And that's kind of a recurring theme in a lot of these, is usually the guy is a jag and she is in some way has acquired some wisdom. So let's hear a little bit of Your Ex-Lover Is Dead.
God, that was strange to see you again, introduced by a friend of a friend, smiled and said, yes, I think we've met before. It started to pour. Captured a taxi despite all the rain.
Now, if I told you, Stephen, that this song contains what I consider two of the wisest lines I know from pop songs about relationships, what would the two, would you know what they were?
Live through this and you won't look back.
That's one.
Live through this and you won't look back.
That's the one that just stops me dead in my tracks every time.
I'm not sorry I met you.
I'm not sorry. It's over. I'm not sorry. There's nothing to say. I'm not sorry. There's nothing to say.
I'm not sorry I met you. I'm not sorry. It's over. I'm not sorry. There's nothing to say. I'm not sorry. There's nothing to say.
Oh my God, this song.
Wow,
seriously,
line.
This is one of the best breakup songs.
I know your brain's so much better than you.
If you haven't heard it, the band is called Stars.
That's a great record.
So many great songs. Your Ex-Lover is Dead is from an album that is fantastic through and through called Set Yourself on Fire. The song opens with a sample of, I believe it's Torquil Campbell's father saying, "When there's nothing left to burn, you must set yourself on fire." Such a great record.
It's very awesome. It's wonderful. Okay, so I took a slightly less nihilistic approach.
I picked Anything You Can Do from Annie Get Your Gun.
Hey, that was mine.
No, I did not. We agreed that we were not going to do theater because you could do that all day.
Pretty much all day.
You could do that all day with your Annie Get Your Guns and your Oklahomas and all that stuff. Okay, I went with something a little bit, it's still wistful. They are not together, but they are... They're going to get back together.
No.
They're going to get back together.
I know where she's going.
Even the Marvin Gaye.
I've got your picture hanging on the wall, but it can't see. Come to me when I call your name. I realize it's just a picture in a frame.
Ooh, I read your letters when you're not near, but they don't move me. They don't groove me like when I hear your sweet voice whispering in my ear.
Don't you know? Ain't nothing like the real thing, baby. Ain't nothing like the real thing. I play my game.
See, they're going to get back together. They're apart right now. She's got the picture.
Uh-huh.
He's got the letters. They're going to get back together because it's love. It's a real thing. And this song has a brilliant thing where it builds. They're singing back and forth. There's a little bit of harmony, but it's mostly back and forth. And then it hits a point in the middle where they're in unison for about
that
two lines.
The chorus is just gorgeous.
But then in the bridge, it hits unison.
No other sound is quite the same as your name. No touch can do half as much.
And then it goes back out.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to get back
together. So structurally, it's actually really well done.
Yeah, and they're completely going
to
get back.
I just feel sorry for their friends because, you know, they've been kind of bitching to their friends this whole time.
What somebody think of the most important people in all this?
Us.
All right, so I think Linda and I might have been eating the same food and drinking the same whatever this weekend because one of mine, not so much Rashomon, they're coming from very much the same perspective. In fact, they're singing the same words. So the man and the woman have exactly the same feelings. Sometimes they're bitter feelings.
Uh-huh.
One lyric is, "Oh, how I wish I'd never met you."
Mm. Oh.
And they both sing it at the same time.
Mm.
Can I have the Where is the Love?
Where is the love you said was mine, all mine, till the end of time? Was it just a lie? Where is the love? If you had had a sudden change of heart, I wish that you would tell me so.
Where is the love?
So they are actually on the cusp of breaking up. This has got to be the butter smoothest breakup is about to happen song ever,
it's
right?
It's true. I think they might still be doing it.
As they're breaking up.
There is no mistaking the vintage of this, the strings, the slow snares. It is 1972, Roberta Flack, Donny Hathaway, who were also responsible, of course, for the closer I get to you.
Right.
One of the great get-together songs.
And I should say, some of these are duos that have Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing is Marvin Gaye, Tammy Terrell, who did several other things together. And that's one of the things that I miss is these kind of duos that weren't exactly bands, but they would get together frequently. And, you know, there's still a lot of them in country, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, like the Country's Civil Wars good at that. Do that. Yeah. Lady Antebellum does that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, the Postal Service is an offshoot band, electronic band of Death Cab for Cutie, and their first album, which has the very evocative title of Give Up, has a song on it called Nothing Better. Let's hear a little bit of it right now. I love that. I feel I must interject.
Writing
that as a lyric.
So Jenny Lewis from Rilo Kiley.
Absolutely, yes. So the guy in the first stanza, or whatever we call it, I don't know music terms, is basically saying, I can't believe you're going to break up with me. He says, I will block the door like a goalie tending the net in the third quarter of a tied game rivalry. Now, Stephen, what's wrong with that?
The fact that Ben Gibbard knows nothing about sports.
Exactly. Well, I was just going to say, I hope that in addition to calling him on his woeful self-pity, she also criticizes him for his bad metaphors.
Absolutely.
Well, there's no quarters
there's
in hockey.
There's no quarters in hockey or in soccer. So, I mean, like, it could be either one. But I like, I don't necessarily want to think that the songwriter just doesn't know. I want it to be part of this character who's just kind of reaching for anything.
Yeah. I suspect it is.
So basically she says, I feel I must interject here. And then she proceeds to explain how she's going to draw up charts and graphs to perform a lecture. She's going to give a lecture on why she has to leave. So she's bringing PowerPoint into the situation.
Break up by PowerPoint, right?
Exactly.
This is genius.
Man, I love this song. Yeah. It is so, you have a heart on a sleeve guy and a woman just going, the last thing she says to him, don't you feed me lines about some idealistic future. Your heart won't heal right if you keep tearing out the sutures.
Oof.
Oof. Oof.
Yeah, we're, so good. We're oofing over here.
Nice. Yeah, I think Ben Gibbard in general, I think is often at his best when there is a foil.
Yeah.
For, I mean, because if you look at a lot of like Death Cab for Cutie song titles, they have these incredibly condescending titles like Someday You Will Be Loved.
I know.
And so when you set that particular guy, and I love Death Cab for Cutie, I love Ben Gibbard, but when you set him against a foil like Jenny Lewis from Rilo Kiley, from the last Ben Gibbard, the Ben Gibbard solo record that came out last year, there's an amazing duet with Amy Mann.
Right.
It's bigger than love. Brighter than all the stars combined, it's dwarfing the sun and burning within my heart and mind. I live with my memories, the bustling fervor of New York, where on 59th Street we quarreled and broke the bathroom door, 'cause you were just drinking.
So yeah, that song is called Bigger Than Love, and I highly recommend it.
You were talking about foils. I have what I think is the perfect song to illustrate what it's like to find the perfect foil for your style. Now, I want to say that we are four people of the pale persuasion sitting around a studio talking about he said, she said songs.
and all within about 5 years of age.
Right. Mm-hmm. So one of us at some point should remember that there is a world of hip-hop out there, which specializes in he
please
said,
tell me,
she said
please
songs.
Tell me you picked Positive K's I Got a Man, because if you didn't, I did.
Can you hit me up with Positive K's I
yes!
Got a Man?
Hey, yo, sweetie, you're looking kind of pretty. What's a girl like you doing in this rough city?
I'm just here trying to hold my own ground.
Yeah, I think I like how that sounds. What you say begins to know each other better.
That sounds good, but I don't think that I can act you.
I don't know, tell me, is it so? Do you get a kick out of telling brothers no?
No, it's not that. See, you don't understand.
Okay, so first of all,
three out of four of us chair dancing, which is as many as there's ever going
to
be.
What's your man got to do with me?
It's true. I love that song. First of all, that is some old school vanilla flavored rap. There might be one curse word in that, and there's maybe,
it's top 40.
Yeah, it's top 40 rap. This is not hardcore at all. It's from 1992.
Wow. Just now, in case you didn't think the 80s extend until 1992.
Yes, they did. Oh, and in the costumes on the video, too.
Yeah.
Which we really should post, because, oh my God, the video.
Oh, yeah.
I said that he found his perfect foil. He wrote both of those lyrics. He wrote the man's lyric and he wrote the woman's lyric. He also performed the woman's lyric and altered the sound of his voice in the studio. So this is not just a he said, she said song. It's a he said, she said from the guy's perspective, performed by the guy. And it's not a breakup song. It's a you are not ever getting together with me song.
Yeah, that's such a great example. I Jess can testify that I also was going to talk about this one.
Also, you know, as goofy as some of those lyrics sound now and as hilarious as the video is now, we all three were chair dancing. That is an infectious groove.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you bet.
What's laid down behind that rap is kind of great.
All right. Different kind of groove. I went with a little older, a little more mellow. Just need the Mamas and the Papas.
I call your name, but you're not there. Was I too for being unfair?
Don't you know I can't sleep at night since you've been gone? I never weep at night.
I can't go on.
Don't you know I can't take it?
Many people know that as a Beatles song. There is a Beatles version of that song. But I know it as that kind of barroom piano rendition, which it's the rare case where I actually don't care as much for the Beatles version, because what you get from this Mamas and the Papas version...
Cheers to the Beatles! Cheers to the Mamas and the Papas!
What you get from this kind of barroom, this kind of saloon version, is this... this sort of seductive Mama Cass lyric where she's doing this sort of, don't you know I can't, and then she's doing this entire I'm so sad without you, I miss you so much, and then it comes in and out with these different tempos and stuff. I love that song. It absolutely kills me. And there's actually a part where the song says I call your name. There's actually a part in the middle where she's going, John.
Oh, Mama Cass.
It's
Mama Cass, we
so
miss you.
Amazing. It's amazing. Always, always listen to that. Well, we look forward to what I'm sure will be a lengthy list. I will try to put together a Spotify playlist once we get some suggestions from all of you, because that is, I think, what we need here. So bring us your he said, she said songs, or your he said songs, or your she said songs, or your dog said, cat said songs. And we will listen to that. And that brings us to our final segment. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson.
Well, I am entering a 10-week period in which my beloved children are with their mother. And that is not what is making me happy, because I will miss them terribly. What I am looking forward to about it...
is being without them.
It's a little bit, I use this analogy all the time, it's like Rumspringa, where the Amish are suddenly thrust into Times Square.
Where'd you get that comparison from?
But I am hoping to use these 10 weeks not only as a period of reflection and an atonement, but
debauchery.
Rumspringa 2, the debauching, to not only finally read a book. I'm planning to read Ready Player One,
which
like 50 people have asked me to read.
Right.
It is sitting on my bedside table. I intend to actually read it. But what I'm really hoping to do, one of the biggest weaknesses of my character, and they are many, is I am a terrible cook. And I am really, really hoping to use these 10 weeks practicing and learning and studying how to be a better cook for my children. And what I'm actually going to ask our listeners to do, I'm going to reach out to the Pop Culture Happy Hour family, I think of you as family, to send me some recipes. What do
Stephen burns a steak at?
I'm asking everyone to send recipes. I actually set up a Gmail account for this person, but it's just popculturehappyhour@gmail.com.
Okay.
We will probably use that for other purposes.
Okay.
But I'm asking people to send recipes. Think beginner level and think cooking for children.
Mm-hmm.
But if people have recommendations, I'm really hoping to become a more well-rounded parent.
Wonderful. That is fantastic, Stephen Thompson. Trey Graham, what is making you happy this week?
Okay, three small things. Cicely Tyson's Tony Award dress.
Yes.
Which, if it does not have its own Twitter account by now,
yeah,
it really, really
sure
should.
It does.
Also, we didn't really call her out, but Cicely Tyson, at age 88, I believe,
you bet,
was nominated for and won her first Tony,
yes,
for the revival of A Trip to Bountiful. So that is making me happy this week. In the theme of strong women, Phyllis Richman, the former food critic of The Washington Post, wrote a letter this week to the Harvard professor who asked her back in 1961 when she applied to the urban planning program at Harvard to explain how she planned to balance her career in urban planning with her responsibilities to her husband and children.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really interesting essay because Phyllis Richman has had a distinguished career,
mm-hmm,
and she got back a two-paragraph letter from this guy saying, yeah, I wouldn't write that letter these days. And that was kind of the end of it.
Well, he sort of said because the circumstances aren't as unfavorable for, as if he had been thinking of her the whole time.
Right. Exactly. It was not what you would call a full-throated mea culpa. And finally, to wrap up the theme of strong women, Hillary Clinton has, mm-hmm, joined Twitter today. As we record this today, Hillary Clinton, her Twitter profile reads, wife, mom, lawyer, women and kids advocate, FLOAR, First Lady of Arkansas,
uh-huh,
FLOTUS,
uh-huh,
U.S. Senator, sex state, author, dog owner, hair icon, pantsuit aficionado, glass ceiling cracker, TBD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton, and her first tweet was sent to Adam Smith and Stacey Lamb, buddies of mine,
mm-hmm,
who started the text from Hillary meme.
You're surrounded by names on the floor, Trey.
It's true. I have dropped them all day
long. We are ankle deep
in
names.
Can't help it. I'm ankle deep in names. Hillary Clinton is on Twitter. Follow her. She's fun.
Thank you, Trey Graham. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Okay, I'm going to throw out a couple things I might have mentioned once or twice before on the podcast. And I know some say that a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. But what about an examined consistency? A purposeful consistency?
A considered.
Considered. Thank you, Trey Graham. Considered consistency. Maria Bamford has a new web show. It's called Ask My Mom. It's exactly that. You write in, ask her a question. She answers as her mom. They're very short. They're very good. It's Maria Bamford. She's the best. Future Bible Heroes, which is the offshoot, mm-hmm, of Magnetic Fields, has a new album for the first time in a while. It's called Party Going. I recommend a song on it called Put Your Children in a Coma.
Okay.
That's it.
Excellent. Well, what is making me happy this week? I wrote a little bit about this on the blog today, and you can find it. Today is Monday, so you can find it in the blog from Monday. But I looked at the wonderful site Smart Bitches Trashy Books today and saw on it something that its founder, the terrific and extremely smart Sarah Wendell, had named the most awesome shoes in the universe. And when I looked at them, I realized that they are an art project that was sent to her by a romance reader, a romance novel reader, because that's what Sarah does. She has a home for romance enthusiasts. Not the kind of home for romance enthusiasts.
Like a retirement home?
Not the kind they talk about on Loveline. But this woman, whose name is Rudy, had decoupaged this pair of heels in tiny copies of romance novel covers. So they are these decoupaged shoes with little tiny romance covers on them. They are the cutest, most adorable, but also incredibly fashionable and gorgeous. They are such cute shoes. They have this little pink trim at the sole. And she said that part of her reason was she realized that you're so often judged on what you like to read that she felt that she needed to sort of perform her act of reading in a more subversive, active kind of way. They are such cute shoes. Thank you, Rudy. Thank you, Sarah, for giving me permission to rerun those photos on the blog, because without the photos, you got nothing. So they were both kind enough to extend that to me. Rudy, you have all the promise in the world art-wise. And Sarah, you are one of my dear internet pals. So that's what's making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, STEPHEN. Or as one of our readers recently said it on Twitter, I hate Stephen.
Nice.
It's not I hate Stephen.
No,
they thought that was your real handle.
Low-level discontent.
Yeah. I dislike
cordial
Stephen.
Not loathing.
Just a distaste.
Just I make the people feel
a slight antipathy.
But you can follow Trey Graham at Trey Graham. Trey with an E, Graham exactly like the cracker. And you can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow our producer, Jess Gittner, at Jess Gittner, G-I-T-N-E-R. And you can follow our esteemed producer, Emeritus and Music Director Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music, which you are bobbing your pumpkin head to right now. And thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week.